Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good Monday afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, where all your drive time show always here for you from 4:30 to 6, of course, to keep you company wherever you are tuned in from. Thank you for tuning in and thank you for picking us. I mean, I'm trying to make sure it doesn't get to my head because, it's the feeling of standing out from the competition that makes me, struggle to keep my ego in check. So wherever you're listening from, if you are driving, just focus on the road and just, eyes on the road, ears on the radio. Sometimes I'm very proud of how corny I can be.
At least it's coordinated, Helmut. Other people would have said eyes on the road and ears plugged to your head. And then people are like, delivery did not work. The delivery did not work. Yeah. But yeah, at least can we call it your African proverb? Helmut's African proverb. It pulled its coordination element off. So, you get your 5 points, Helmut.
Thank you.
You are now up to zero, You still have to get into the positive. You're now only on equilibrium.
Sound like my bank account.
Hey, I mean, that includes a lot of us. But, we're looking forward to some public sector colleagues to give us some joy later. Is it this week or next week? This week is the 13th. Next week Friday, where they will be making that intersection.
Whoever picked the date for Valentine's Day didn't really think it through. I mean, the teachers get paid on the 20th. Everyone is on the month end. Now you're like, what the heck? Right, home run.
Weird part still, isn't it, that a lot of the ladies are already making jokes about Valentine's Day. I don't know who they are signaling to, but it's only them making jokes about Valentine's Day. You don't see any men making jokes about Valentine's Day.
I think this is the most dangerous time to get in a relationship because you never really know if you are, if this is a relationship or Valentine's ship.
You say they only want to know you for the feeling of being in a relationship.
Expiry date is a little too close.
It's literally at midnight that day.
I don't see a future in us. Okay.
Fine. 8 a.m. the next morning. So.
And then 8 o'clock the next morning, all the, the lovey-dovey, all the cooperation is gone. Speaking of cooperation, let's talk about that. On a global level, in a much grander scheme of things, we are talking about global cooperation and in terms of diplomacy, geopolitics, economics, you name it.
Helmut.
And things are not looking good.
It's okay. Besides the not looking good situation, which is obviously probably, the executive summary of this global cooperation barometer report tries to paint it in a scenario as if it is all countries are equal.
Exactly. Even if you look at the World Economic Forum risk analysis report.
Yeah.
Look, what I can't seem to wrap my mind around is how we are acting like all these divisions are new.
True, and whether these divisions suddenly happened now
just out of the blue
from the middle, just from 2025 last year when Donald Trump became president,
because they didn't.
They actually didn't. He probably came and what do you call that? He probably exacerbated the situation. But let's draw on certain scenarios where things don't look equal. For example, look at the tariffs that Trump brought in last year. What was it known? The Liberation Day tariff announcements in April of last year. So countries like, Lesotho, which has probably a million or less than a million people in it, were hit with it was Lesotho, Vietnam, and who was the other country that had the highest tariff application to them?
Was in Cambodia somewhere there.
Yeah. But people were asking the question, you know, what did Lesotho do to the United States? Even though Trump was arguing from the trade deficit side of things,
yeah.
But the trade deficit is based on a scenario that literally speaks to how we look at the relationship, the standing relationship between two countries in the world after World War II. So suddenly now we have to forget that Lesotho was a protectorate, and then Lesotho was some sort of a, I don't want to use that term actually, but before 1990, you could have viewed, even though Lesotho is technically a kingdom, you could have viewed Lesotho as probably being the protectorate, because literally they got that protectorate status from the British. And that was some sort of scenario when Shaka Zulu was still alive. So I'm talking about pre-1900.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, Lesotho and the United States can never be equal. I don't even see a future, Helmut, where Lesotho will reach the level of the United States. And it's nothing bad to Lesotho. If there's any people from Lesotho listening, I apologize. It's nothing negative, but we have to look at the realities.
Yeah, but you have to be specific, like which United States? The glorious one or this one?
Which glorious one, Helmut?
The one from, I'm not talking about glorious as in, you know, if you are black, it's not that glorious. And
what?
I'm not helping my case, am I? Back to the basics.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. You are looking at it as an empire that's at the height of its power. But because right now I'm inclined to agree with Mia Shimer that that power is declining.
Mia Shimer, Sachs, who's the other guy? Glenn Deason. No, Glenn Deason.
Richard Wolff is also.
Yeah,
in that
Richard
category,
Wolff is the other guy. Obviously, people are asking them, literally, those three thinkers, when is the decline? Because they are all saying that it is happening. What are the moves? What are the telltale signs? I'm also asking that particular question, even though Richard Murphy and the other economist, Steve Keen, all of them are highlighting that it is a ticking time bomb. This presidency of Donald Trump literally is a ticking time bomb for said particular decline. But
empires just don't collapse overnight. The British is still in that category.
Well, the British were technically forced them to give it away. They gave it away.
Mm-hmm. Wait, to who?
To the Americans.
Forced by who? They were the empire.
Well, if you look at World War One, World War One was technically the war that bankrupted most of Europe.
Bankruptcy.
So they had kingdoms, they had kings, they had monarchs, except for the French. When things kicked off in World War One, obviously the Americans had their isolationist policy, staying out of European affairs, which was dictated from the Monroe Doctrine. Donald Trump is trying to bring that doctrine back, but now in a more 3 January-esque kind of a picture.
And also renamed to Donro.
Celebrate your loved ones with ShopRite this Valentine's Day with a wide range of everything you need for the perfect gift. Celebrate love and low prices with great deals like a 100 mils gold series ladies perfume, all variants for only $49.99 each, and red velvet or Valentine's cake for just $109.99 each. Celebrate love and low prices this Valentine's Day. Offers valid until 15 February 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Care that builds with you. That's the rollover benefit from NHB. When you claim less than a defined amount of your day-to-day benefits in a year, the unused amount is carried over for the next year, like a savings account for your health. You can use your rollover benefit in many ways, from co-payments to medical costs usually not covered, even contribution holidays. Learn more at nhb.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHB, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHB, we're about you.
Fall in love with the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99. 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99. 1.5 kg Real Good Mixed Chicken Portions for $79.99. And 10 kg Bokomo Fat Cook Flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Celebrate your loved ones with ShopRite this Valentine's Day with a wide range of everything you need for the perfect gift. Celebrate love and low prices with great deals like a 100 ml Gold Series Ladies Perfume, all variants, for only $49.99 each. And Red Velvet or Valentine's Cake for just $109.99 each. Celebrate love and low prices this Valentine's Day. Offers valid until 15 February 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Welcome back from that extended break. Now let's just let's continue from where we left off. To backtrack a bit, today's home run discussion is proudly inspired by, you know, it's proudly inspired by the 2026 global cooperation barometer, which is a report that's published annually from the look of things, when they just look at how good are countries actually cooperating. And they do this by looking at a few, you know, like you know, different dimensions of cooperation that that is considered very important in terms of cooperation if you want to achieve you know, those goals on a United Nations Sustainable Development Goal level. Now, that's the Global Cooperation Barometer is structured, according to the report itself, along five dimensions of global connection, and that is trade and capital, innovation and technology, climate and natural capital, health and wellness, peace and security. Like, when they are, so, these are like the key, you know, the key factors that the Global Cooperation Barometer looks at. They look at, you know, the main, like, there are five main pillars that they're looking at. That, and all these pillars must be, you know, are in line with the UN, Sustainable Development Goals. And, these are the pillars where, now on these pillars, cooperation is very central. Because they do point out that, these five pillars, according to the cooperation barometers, were chosen because of their impact on global development. Because, of course, every country needs, trade, you know, every country needs trade and capital. Every country needs innovation and technology. Every country needs, climate and natural capital. We're talking about energy transition and, climate change mitigation strategies, and all these things requires investments. And if one thing was made clear in a 2015 Paris agreements is that there are a lot of developing countries that cannot afford to fund their own energy transition. That's where developed countries now comes in handy. You know, basically come into assist. And every country needs health and wellness type of investment. Everything from the, you know, from skills, infrastructure, you know. Well, both the physical and digital. All these things, you know, and speaking of which, our Minister of Health, I'm looking forward to our public service officials, you know, getting health services from public health sectors. Can't wait to see a parliamentarian in the queue at Hakahana Clinic. And that's coming from April, people. April 2026. I still have that video on YouTube. The internet never forgets. Now,
okay, Hamoud, remember, ne? That is a localized example you're using for Namibia.
Uh-huh.
Remember, this is between countries from the global north versus the global south, which builds back to our statement at the earlier of the start of the show.
Yeah.
It assumes that all countries are equal.
Well, all men are created equal, says a bunch of guys that had slaves.
Yeah, and then a whole bunch of other guys would go and argue until someone went and pulled an apple from a tree. We were not supposed to pull from a tree. And
she just had to be a career woman.
And then kicked us out of Eden for no reason, or had us kicked out of Eden for no reason. I'm sorry, guys, for making things public, but you know what? Your gender was the issue on that note, on that basis.
Translation, I'm paying rent because of you guys.
you guys were at fault for that. But on the assumption of all nations being equal, and this is where things get interesting, Ahmed. Okay. I recently wrote an article for the e-paper. It's not yet used for the e-paper, but in it, Africa and China are obviously kicking off the people-to-people theme relationship discussion, which sets both sort of like geographic locations on a course to growing closer to each other.
People to people.
Now, this forms part of the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation of 2024's declaration. Remember when we dissected the declaration itself, where they had these particular pathways of achieving closer relationships or closer relations between Africa and China.
Yeah.
And then we did the South-to-South UN platform discussion where that report that was compiled by Antonio Guterres' office, the General Secretary's office, or the Secretary General's office, for who are the best countries, which countries are in the best position to help with Global South developmental needs. And it was identified that the BRICS nations, who all come from the developmental or the Global South neighborhood, are the best to champion Global South growth. So when you look at World Economic Forum, who created it, for whose needs it was predominantly created for Global North's needs and for Global North's agendas. Now I'm talking about the politics in play.
Yeah.
So it was Global North's agendas for Global North's needs. And even though they use the word World Economic Forum and, you know, various kinds of representatives from Africa and Latin America and Southeast Asia are invited, it never truly speaks to what is the Global South's needs in relation to what the Global North is talking about. And the Global North is literally guys that include, you can probably take them from the G7. You can probably expand it to the G7 plus. You can ignore South Africa. You can ignore, you can't ignore India in that discussion. You can probably ignore South Africa and Brazil in that discussion. Because if you have to look at what countries like South Africa and Brazil have to do, countries like South Africa and Brazil have to literally develop a bloc.
Yeah.
So the biggest economy in SADC is South Africa's economy. But if you look at how stable SADC is, it actually allows South African economic interests to permeate throughout SADC.
Yeah.
The same for Brazil. Brazil represents, when Brazil shows up, Helmut, Brazil speaks about Mercosur. Remember the Brazil-Namibia discussion?
Yeah.
Where the Brazilian ambassador in 2024 met with representatives from the Ministry of Trade and Industry, when that ministry still existed, about Namibia and Brazil looking at closer relationships. And the Brazilian ambassador was speaking about Mercosur through that whole discussion.
Like their version of SADC?
Their version of SADC, but at a more
economic,
at a more advanced economic level.
Yeah.
So, because the whole discussion for Mercosur's existence is, trade. It's looking for trade. Specifically, it's not about living in peace and solidarity and all those lovey-dovey hippie sounds that Southern African politicians like to preach.
Let's all live together in one giant ecumenical hug.
Without smoking the holy herb.
Uh-huh.
But for some reason, everything is just solidarity and we've achieved
peace
hardship,
and security.
Peace and security. We've achieved hardships when. Now we need to look forward to. No. Mercosur, guys.
Are we trading or not?
Yeah. What's the business?
Yeah.
What's the deal with business? How are we going to make business with each other, for each other?
Yeah.
And what are the benefits for each other? So that's obviously what led to those riots that are currently going on in France and in the Netherlands and in Belgium regarding the Mercosur trade deal that was signed for agricultural goods, because the European farmers are unhappy about that deal.
Because their products are not prioritized.
Their products are going to be outpriced. The South American goods are going to come in at a cheaper price, definitely. Yeah. You don't know if they'll be at better quality, because the demand always, if you trade with Europe and with countries in the global north, you have to sell A grade to them.
Yeah.
Meaning you will never sell A grade to Namibia. If Namibia produces or sells meat to Europe, Europe demands, tells, and they tell Namibia, you better sell us the best of your product, yeah, of your beef. Meaning the best of your best is not seen in Namibian shops. That means Namibian consumers cannot afford locally produced best of the best A-grade products.
Even if they sold it to you.
Even if it is made in Namibia.
Yeah.
The Namibian consumer cannot afford it. It gets back to the assumption that all countries are equal. Because if the assumption was that all countries are equal,
yeah,
you as a local consumer, Helmut, here in Namibia, you would have gone to a Meatco or whichever entity that exports beef or it exports a consumer product outside of Namibia. I'm not talking about gold and I'm not talking about a diamond and I'm not talking about uranium. That is not a consumer product. Those are minerals.
Yeah.
A mineral was never a consumer product. You would be able to go to any of these entities that sell export products, consumer products to the EU or whichever country out in the global north, to say, hey, listen, why don't you try selling this as A-grade? You source, Namibians source A-grade first before you sell the A-grade somewhere else. You would clearly be told, well, money talks.
Here's the price.
Are you willing to pay this price per kilogram versus what the EU citizen is paying a price per kilogram for, which is going to be in euro. Yours is in Hendrik Witbois and
a lot of Hendrik Witbois
and a few Sam Nyomas. And if you see that they don't match up, you will understand the not so equal dimension immediately that pops up.
Yeah.
So we are creating these scenarios. And when you get back to the earlier point that I made about it's the BRICS countries that are in the best position to help with Global South developmental needs, meaning to champion and to assist, we are sitting with a dilemma. When I say we are sitting with a dilemma, this means that we've got thinkers, think tanks, academics in other parts of the global north who compile these reports, and then it looks like literally that Namibia has already reached the level, for example, of a Switzerland. Because Davos is in Switzerland. Namibia has supposedly reached the level of a Switzerland.
Yeah.
No, we're only 35 years old. Or Namibia has achieved...
And also we didn't steal gold.
I was hoping you would not remember those parts, yeah. Or Namibia reached a certain level of...
I'm gonna face the reality.
of industrial independence from South Africa.
Yeah.
No, we have not.
Yeah.
Or Namibia is at such a particular position now in the whole global infrastructure development aspect that we are literally financing infrastructure in other developing countries. No, we are not. Or Namibia is at a level where Namibia can say, hey, listen, I can bankroll carbon or green industrial initiatives in another country. No, Namibia is not there.
You know, when it comes to the comparisons that you're just throwing there, that's where I now really, really come to appreciate. I really come to appreciate countries like China, because if you look at a lot of countries, the way that they have, they have gotten to achieving their economic prosperity is they have a lot of very dark chapters in their history books for them to get there.
Mm.
Yeah, because they had to basically run around the world pillaging and plundering for them to get the resources that they have, that have enabled them to build their countries to the economic levels they are at.
Yeah.
Except China sort of like flipped the script.
Yeah.
Yeah. And didn't have to run around the world, basically, you know, colonizing everyone in the name of all loving God.
Mm.
Yeah. So, that's the, you know, at least that's the only example I can think of when it comes to, when it comes to, okay, you know what, as a country, especially as a country that's in the developing category, we are going to get there in terms of, economic growth.
Mm.
Yeah. But we don't have to go full British on everyone for us to get there. We don't have to go full, full United States for us to get there.
We don't have to have a Donroe doctrine.
We don't have to come up with a Donroe doctrine for us to get there. It can be achieved via trade and diplomacy alone.
Mm.
Yeah, you don't have to storm countries. But for a very long time, unfortunately, that was the case. You know, the Spanish thought that was the way to go. The French thought that was the way to go. The Portuguese, the British, the Americans, they all thought that was the way to go. That for a country to achieve its economic goals in terms of, to achieve any level of, of economic and political power, they have to go out and steal
someone else's territory.
Yes, just steal someone else's territory, steal their resources, steal their people for you to get there. But now China is part of the, economic prosperity that does not have colonialism, colonial history attached to it, gives you sort of like a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of, we can still achieve it even if we don't have to pick, this diabolical way of doing things.
Yeah. I mean, it's also another scenario, Hamoud, drawing now back to the example you gave of the local MP or the local government official having to only strictly utilize government medical facilities.
April is coming. Looking forward to it.
Why does it sound like an April Fool? Why are you saying you've won April? Financial year of government, which starts on 1 April, Helmut? Or is it April Fool? I know I've heard it before.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like completely sort of like highlighted, even though the confirmation might be on the table already.
No, leave that for my social media. I don't have to worry about Karen in there.
Okay, all right. So,
but don't worry, I'm still African, so I have respect for people.
Senior individuals.
I have respect because believe me, if I, even sitting here at Eagle FM, right?
Mm.
If I said something, something that's rude or something that's just even flat out insulting about an elder, believe me, that elder and the police will be the least of my worry, because those ones will be punishing me, putting human rights in mind. People at home don't know human rights. Did you offend an elder or not? If the answer is yes, there's not a constitution on this planet that will save you.
Helmut, at least I can help you. I'm no lawyer, but I'll at least help.
You see, that's the problem. They are very traditional.
They are traditional, but you must also start, learning some format of Tai Chi, that just inadvertently decides to block everything, You put up an invisible shield. There is no, what do they call those things, an infinity gauntlet of any kind.
Dude, we are talking about African parenting here. They are asking you a question and they also want you to shut up all at the same time.
And answer you at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. That explains why a police officer will be asking, where are you going? Shut up. Okay. But anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So the point I was making, when you look at that example, there are countries that are at a level where the entire tax system can literally fund 100% subsidized healthcare, which is the universal healthcare that the previous Minister of Health, Shangula, was motivating in the National Assembly. And now obviously iterations being made since last year into this year that, government officials expressly have to use only government health facilities. It's okay. It's a given. Ultimately, it's a given. You can assume that this was supposed to be the picture that they wanted on day one. But Namibia obviously has a dual medical system or dual health system, private care and public care. But where things get nuanced is, does the public health care have the additional services, for example, for additional or enhanced medical needs, i.e., What do our old age homes look like for the elderly in society? What do we train enough nurses and what do you call those people, caregivers, to look after people in government-run old age facilities? Because there's a lot of privately owned old age facilities. Because clearly, you know, there's, I won't say it is as clear as day.
Yeah.
But you can pick up on a specific sort of like a vibe that, in the medical realm of Namibia, because it's a sector / industry. That particular realm has a notion in terms of if you want the best, you must go private.
Yeah.
Or you must stay at home and be at the mercy of your family members. Or you go to a old age home based on the mercy of complete strangers, if they will respond to your needs or not. And I've seen bad scenarios of the public one. You know your family, so you can anticipate and expect the level of treatment there.
Mm-hmm.
And you, if you don't have the money, you don't know what you could afford for your money in the private one. So, there are countries in this world that literally have those facilities that can finance that out of the state coffers itself, meaning having it as well, an enhanced welfare system, public welfare system. Namibia is not there. Helmut, it's also something that I've observed that it seems like we as Namibia, as the country, not as the Namibians in the country wants first world standards, systems, services, products, and to be able to be present at first world platforms. But when you get to the groundwork of things, we are dealing with developing, aging, in some cases, non-existent infrastructure, education levels, skill levels, technologies, technical expertise, leadership even. Hence the reason why I, before I took the leave and back in last month, when I made emphasis on that point in terms of the kind of politicians we vote for, or the caliber of politician that we have coming into a local and regional authority discussion, or who is standing for presidential election. In many cases, if you look at the manifestos and stuff like that, or the arguments or the rallies and the discussions that are put forward, we are stuck still as if we are in 1989 or in 1990.
Yeah.
We stay stuck there in the discussions that those politicians are hammering on. However, Namibia has advanced in 35 years. We can't just brag about world-class roads and road systems. We need to start advancing and building things on what those roads and road systems offer. We need to start giving various kinds of dimensions. But when you read into this global cooperation report, I still see that Namibia draws better benefit from South Africa, from China, and then thirdly from the EU. In that order. Yeah. Namibia draws better benefit in cooperation from SADC in South Africa, from China, and from the EU. The EU is obviously because of the Global Gateway framework.
Yeah.
Because Namibia is in Africa, and obviously Namibia's particular colonial linkages to Germany. Obviously Namibia is in that pathway. But it's not to say that that other chapter of history is satisfied. Or is qualified.
No, still has so many question marks.
It still has an extensive amount of discussion left open to it. Oh, interesting fact. Do you know what I discovered? That time that you took your week off for leave in Jan.
Yeah.
Somewhere in last year, in 2025, the AU decided that it should not be a one-year theme. I was looking up what is going to be the theme for 2026 from the AU.
The reparations and the joint reparations discussion.
Yeah. So I was looking up, what did they decide on a theme for 2026? And it was somehow a question mark situation for 2026.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in last year, in 2025, it was motivated that 2025 was year one for a 10-year period of championing for reparations and justice for the African continent. So now we've got to look at the year of 2025 for the AU's goals. The AU's goals, which includes Namibia's goals.
Yeah.
How will that then be positioned specifically with the AU and its partners, its development partners like China, like the EU, like the United States now, like Germany directly, because that GIZ developmental organization is present in almost every African country.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And it's present at the AU, just like it has a presence in the Namibian government and the Namibian government structure. It advises the Namibian government at almost every ministry level. You sit there with an understanding like, okay, so is it actually Germany or is it actually the EU that has this close relationship with Africa?
I mean, you have pointed this out like several times that, when it comes to, I think it was last year when we were talking about, Africa, talking about financing it, their own AU type, you know, AU level initiatives.
Yeah.
And one problem is that, you know, when you look at the practical reality on the ground in terms of who funds most, if not, let's just go with most of the African Union and the individual African countries, you know, initiatives from health, education, you know, safety and security, that's where your military now comes in.
Mm.
You see that, well, the EU, actually, you know, now the EU is funding projects both, you know, across the African continent on different, you know, individual African countries and also as an AU level.
Yeah.
And, but we have a joint agenda 2030. So, the joint agenda 2030 were just there to warm the seat while the EU does all the funding.
And we,
we need prayers, man.
No, we do. We need serious religious interventions on epic, and I'm talking about on apocalyptic levels in Africa. Because, we obviously see that, like in this Global Cooperation report, this report also assumes that fragmentation is not happening. Now, what I mean by fragmentation is I'm looking at the AU.
Yeah.
Those three cool cats there in West Africa who decided to sign their own military alliance between the three of themselves, those guys have not been invited to AU functions. And they're sort of like, they also sort of like have some sort of a stepchild attitude towards the AU, meaning it's frosty.
Oh yeah, it is frosty.
They don't trust the AU, primarily because the AU has got these deep entrenched political linkages to the EU, to the United States.
Okay, political, economic, social, almost on all levels.
Yeah. And these guys are just primarily dealing with Russia directly, which also creates a dilemma. They are also publicly calling France an interfering nation. But except for Burkina Faso, the other two guys, Mali and Niger, still have to satisfy and qualify a legal requirement because they are still part of the French Republic. They are literally mentioned in the French Republic. So they are part of the French community.
Now, this is where, you know, this is where I think, the repealing of old laws really must be, you know, it's one of those elephant in the rooms when it comes to relationship between, French colonies, you know, former French colonies and France itself to this day, because they still have this, you know, this, very old laws that, you know, that can, you know, that can easily be seen as a means of continuing economic exploitation, which is what a lot of, a lot of leaders, especially the opposition guys in these countries, that's how they look at France. Yeah. If you look at their, you know, if you look at the, you know, the currency itself.
It's backed up by the euro.
Exactly.
Now,
where's the mother of all the most French colonies and central banks?
And the worst part of that discussion is, Helmut, is that in the 50s, now I had this discussion yesterday morning on my Sunday morning take. In the 50s, when Charles de Gaulle became president of France
that
after the Second World War, he literally put a referendum from Paris to these French African territories.
It's the 21st century. I don't understand why France still thinks everyone is still going to be okay with them controlling.
No. They asked these guys.
Yeah.
They asked them. They put the question to them. It was a referendum held in each of these French-speaking territories. Do you still want to be part of the French Republic?
Yeah.
Or do you want to be independent? It's only Burkina Faso that said, my bro, sharp. We'll go our way. Obviously, the interference still persisted.
Oh, yep.
However, the other African territories, up to Chad and Central African Republic, all of them said all of their citizens at that time in the 1950s said we want to be part of the French Republic and the French community and persist with whatever relationship we've got with France. France has to make all economic decisions for us. Now, you gave away your identity already in the 50s for future generations coming back after that. It should have been the prerogative of the presidents in each of those African countries to approach France once again and say, hey, listen, my guy, let's revisit this discussion. Can we have I want to have a referendum in my country, and I want us to sort of like become actually independent instead of paying annual subscription fees to your central bank.
Like seriously, it's just a subscription fee at this point.
I mean, it's worse than Microsoft Office subscriptions. You've been paying 50 years of subscription fees to the French central bank for decision making, that you don't have control over. So based upon that particular picture, unfortunately, it's the fault of the French speaking West African neighborhood. I understand it's the reason why the Nigerians had the headaches with the French-speaking West Africans in ECOWAS, because they were also the guys championing the CF franc. Remember the CF franc?
Yeah.
Before the coup d'etats happened in those three countries, they were the same guys championing the CF franc, and the Nigerians were saying, "Whoa, what are you guys trying to do here? You guys are trying to bring in it's the ECOWAS. What was that thing's name? It was the ECOWAS.
A whole different currency.
ECOWAS dollar or the ECOWAS something. It was that currency that they were trying to champion. And Nigeria was saying, no, guys, I have an independent.
We're not going to do that.
Yeah, I have an independent currency. Just because you have the CF franc that is backed up by the euro, it doesn't mean that you can just unilaterally apply something in my economy that has the Naira running in it. So I legitimately understood the Nigerian concerns, because what many people forget is that your money, Helmut, is part of your national identity as a country. So that technically means that the French-speaking West Africans in ECOWAS did not understand national identity through currency. They did not. That's the first trade-off. I mean, Helmut, when you had to look at the origins of the euro, the Germans did not want to drop the Deutschmark. The French didn't want to drop the franc. Who was the other guys? Even the Italians, they didn't want to drop the lira. Nobody wanted to drop their stuff. They literally had to convince each other for like 10 years since 1990. They had to convince each other. Look, guys, we're already in an advanced common economic framework in Western Europe. Mm-hmm. Let's just take it to the next step. Let's make the EU a formal thing, and let's make the euro a formal thing. And that's how the discussion went, because everyone had their own unique identity through their currencies.
Now, okay, no.
No, I'm done.
Okay. On who to blame for the currency? Oh, I blame France on that one. Because of their Operation Peso, which is now public knowledge. That was a French operation to basically destabilize Guinea-Bissau. Mm. Because when these former French colonists were asked, do you guys have your own independence, or do you want to run your entire financial system, aka your currency, through France? Sokoto Touré of Guinea-Bissau went like, okay, fine. I think I'm just good running my own country. Mm. I don't think the French like that.
Mm.
Charles de Gaulle made it his life's mission to make sure that no former colony of France would basically come up with a brilliant idea to run their own country. Operation Pestle, and now this is Pestle in, as in, you know, the detergent.
You're not serious. You're not serious, Ahmed.
I mean, well, you have a phone. Operation
Pestle. Hey, that guy was another level.
Look, Charles de Gaulle was, Charles de Gaulle was a very dedicated guy, if you ask the French. And he was a very evil guy, if you ask French colonies.
If you were African.
Yeah, if you were African. So, these guys were, I think when you look at it from the perspective of, of Operation Pestle, it's very easy to conclude that, the whole asking them that, okay, well, do you guys want your own independence? I think that was 90 to 100% PR.
Mm.
They really didn't want to give them that independence. They wanted to cling on to the economic system of these countries because they, you know, it's the resources of this country that, you know, that basically runs the French economy.
Mm.
You take that out of the equation and pretty much every developed country is, you know, is in serious trouble. That's why in 2021, the French authorities, the French government representatives did not like what Nana Akufo-Addo told them. That, Ghana wants to process cocoa at home.
And he was lucky because he's a former British colony.
Yeah.
And
the Swiss were like, well, we invite you here and you are telling us that.
But it's a good point he made.
It's a good point. But it's a good point for Ghana. Yeah. It's not a good point for a lot of multinationals that are based in Switzerland that relies on Ghana's cocoa for their end products. Yeah. Everything boils down to resources. So now, it all boils down to, to what you said earlier, that, this is assuming that all countries are equal. We are not equal economically. We are not equal in terms of power and influence. We are not equal in terms of, in terms of military strength, diplomatic influence. And now that's basically power and influence. And power and influence is everything. The whole idea of Monroe Doctrine is based on the premises of power and influence. This does not want anyone they can compete with in the Western Hemisphere. Otherwise, that's just not good for control and dominance. So.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
Yeah. But, we'll quickly take a short break and then come back after that. Belvita University, where everyone is an achiever. This is for the 2026 applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences. The following courses are on offer: Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and the Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Velvica University, where everyone is an achiever.
Welcome back. The time is 24 past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And on today's Home Run, we are looking at a global cooperation report. This is based on the Global Cooperation Barometer of 2026.
Helmut?
Yeah.
Just on the point that we had just before the break.
Yeah. We are not equal.
There's two factual elements here.
Yeah.
That we've observed during 2025 leading now into 2026.
Yeah.
I'd like to point firstly to peace and security cooperation. That has continued to decrease according to this global cooperation barometer by the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
They are correct on this. Why? Because primarily much of the destabilization has taken place in the developing nations.
Yeah.
So we mentioned now the three Sahelian African countries of Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali. As well as also, animosity between trade relations between the United States and the continent of Africa. And I am forecasting literally at the end of this year when the newer version of the AGOA agreement, because the AGOA agreement is now extended
until the end of the year.
If that new version pops up, Because literally reading the language that was used by the one trade representative there of Trump's administration, the language he used was to say the United States has, or the trade partners of the United States have to do more for the benefits of the US. I was like, okay, so you're trying to structure this language like the same way you guys have been approaching China?
Is that how trade's supposed to work?
The same way that they've been approaching the EU, and the same way that they've been approaching countries in South America. Meaning, you have to do more for us.
So, the only right way to do things is our way.
Which sounds weird, because that's not how trade relations work between two countries.
Nope.
And even though Donald Trump can argue the discussion of, what's that thing's name that I used, the trade deficit scenario, first and foremost, there's not many Namibians in this country that can afford a lot of American-made products. Because firstly, the Americans would definitely sit in a position, in a powerful position, purely through through currency, by saying a car produced in the United States will definitely cost a lot more when that thing is shipped to Namibia. And now a Namibian has to try and buy that American car, and you convert it to US dollars, and then you sit with a headache. You sit with a headache of a price tag. Hence the reason why a lot of cars are made in Australia for Southern Africa or for Africa, or they're made in Brazil for Southern Africa, or they're made in South Africa for the rest of Africa, or they're made in Egypt for Africa, Morocco for Africa. But it's not the cars built in Germany or the cars built in France and shipped to Africa. No, because then you've got an EU price tag associated to that manufacturing or that assembly. It has to be at a competitive, you know, level, a level that is affordable to the consumer that you're going to sell the thing to. I still don't understand.
This is politics and economics in collision.
But it's more like a business person trying to do politics, because that's what Trump's first suit is. That's his first, you know, his first mask is that he is a business person, a business owner. It's a business owner trying to do politics. It's a business owner trying to be a politician, trying to be a business person.
Okay, but I don't know how he's not having enough precedents for this. First of all, I think in just using his administration, the beginning of his second administration, you just find one very easy example there. Elon Musk tried to balance political and business presence in the White House, and that almost... that had a significant impact on his business side of things, especially when it comes to Tesla. He had to put his dodgy, you know, drama, you know, aside, so that he can basically step into business, step out of politics, step into business to run Tesla. Because people, especially in Europe, were burning up Teslas.
And
it was that bad, because the political terrible reputation was beginning to impact his economic side. I mean, his business side.
Well, he's also trying to now meddle in European politics, Helmut, and the European consumers are like, if you as an African / Canadian / American is speaking bad about European policies, trade policies specifically, and industrial policies, then why should their consumers buy into his particular products?
Exactly.
Which is one of the other particular things that I could never understand regarding the hype in Namibia about Starlink even.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the pivotal question, and I asked this question, many people, apparently I've now heard it from two or other people, that on these WhatsApp groups with government officials and other industry participants and the likes, apparently the way I ask questions is like, I am a very angry person. All I do is, like I was taught in English class, get to the point, ask the question, and keep it short and concise. Don't drench it in unnecessary...
Don't douse it in honey.
You know, in unnecessary stuff. Just get to the point, ask your question based on the content that you have at your disposal, and see what response you get. So I ask those kinds of questions. So our Eagle FM listeners probably would know, those of you that are subscribers of the Villager, of the articles that we had about Starlink in the January editions of the Villager, that the fundamental question still exists. what can Starlink do for you, the average person out there? Because for some reason, there was this hype that I still cannot understand why.
Universal internet connection.
No, it's not universal. You are paying an exorbitant amount of money.
That's one of the questions that
the cheapest option is $1,600 Namibian dollars.
I'm not sure if it was HD that asked that question, but how many of us now, average income earners, how many of us can afford the service? That's one of those things that we didn't look at.
True, Hamoud. And that's just one dimension of the service versus what you already find in the Namibian market. I mean, one of our own advertisers, meaning companies that advertise here with us at Eagle FM, Paratus, and I'm a Paratus, I'm a Paratus consumer. They've got a lot more on offer.
Packages, yeah.
And a lot.
In your budget range.
And a lot more within your budget range. I mean, the cheapest for Starlink, $1,600? No, man. No, Helmut, that's not an option in a market.
You're drowning in Tampa because of Superway. Now you want 1,000. Okay, sorry.
And you know what's the worst part even? It's not even a new technology. It's not even new. It's not even novel. So the dimension, and do you know what's the biggest concern?
That the coverage would be there, except the coverage can't be, cannot be pulled, you can't pull off the coverage if you can't afford the price tag that comes with that coverage.
Exactly.
Okay.
The biggest concern is also that Elon Musk has to prove how he's going to invest locally in Namibia, which is not something that had been satisfied. Hence the reason I asked the question, what is the benefit to Namibia?
That's where the investment component comes in.
Which has been the biggest discussion also in South Africa, is that Elon Musk has to prove to his mother country, South Africa, the joint venture initiative, the local partnership with a local service provider in South Africa. It's not you come in from the United States based in Silicon Valley, you're making decisions in your hotel in London, and you are just dictating things as you want in South Africa. No. There's clear-cut approaches that the Global South countries want. You need to come and invest, and when you come in and invest, you need to partner up through a joint venture. The Japanese have it. The Americans have it.
Yeah.
It's only the British and the Europeans probably, but the Europeans are now also starting to practice or exercise this particular trade component and requirement. Invest in a joint venture initiative in their markets. You must prove that you're hiring Europeans. You must prove in Japan that you're hiring Japanese. You must prove in South Korea and China you are hiring Chinese and South Koreans, to work and to promote the product and service that you wish to bring through. So you need to prove the local investment component from your side. This is not a blanket thing of, I'm going to be an agent doing this on behalf of this, No.
Wait, you remember was that late last year, earlier this year, the Hyundai electric car battery plant that was raided by ICE in the US?
Last year?
Yeah, that which was full of immigrants. Then they found out that all those quote-unquote illegal immigrants were South Koreans that were brought in to build the plant and then train the Americans to work in that industry, and then they would go back.
Yeah.
Then they interrupted everything halfway through. That's the problem of mixing politics with business, because you are making,
And it all started from a woman.
Oh, yeah. That
who did not understand.
Oh, that lady was cooked on social media.
And she was defending herself, but if you go and literally look at what the South Korean press, because the South Korean press, here's the thing there. In countries like the United States, South Korea, and Japan, their political leaders literally are on speed dial by the CEOs and owners of big businesses in their economies.
Yeah.
If you're in a country like, for example, like China, even South Africa, even Namibia, probably, and I'm just sort of like giving a sketch, a wide assumption, is that there would be channels that you have to work through. But in some countries, literally, the business, the industrial development and the political policy-making arms of that country literally walk together.
Yeah.
The same too in Germany. They literally walk together. So this woman, primarily, she literally let loose a cat between the, in the chicken coop or in the, you know, she threw the cat in there between the chickens and the cat just went haywire because that cat obviously felt like this is now Christmas in June.
And the chickens were like, ain't no way.
And obviously how it was handled with or how it was dealt with was that literally this, it was not, the intervention didn't come through from Trump. The intervention came through from the Korean president who made threats to Trump. Meaning Trump did not even care about this clear investment, major investment discussion that was taking place in the state of Georgia, outside of Atlanta, the capital Atlanta. And literally just this one woman's phone call destroyed bilateral relations between Korea, South Korea and the United States.
One video on social media, diplomatic tensions through the roof.
One phone call destroyed everything. So, there, in such a scenario.
And also the idiot police that were called, like, what happened to the good old due diligence? So you're just gonna take my word for it.
Or what happened, Hamoud? You send one guy or two officials.
Yeah.
To go talk to the project manager. Of the construction.
Yeah, to sort of like get a picture of what's going on there.
And go sit down and have a meeting with them.
No, they didn't.
And now showing up with buckies and tanks and helicopters and drones and everyone is heavily packed up and ready for action for construction workers who are busy working and factory workers busy installing equipment.
Yeah.
And now that whole project was literally put on ice.
You can imagine everyone was like, okay, what's going on here? I mean, they rolled in that like they were invading Fallujah, and
Helmut.
Never traveling to the Middle East, am I?
Oh my goodness!
A quick break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back to Home Run. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. We are looking at a global cooperation and the degradation thereof.
So,
So they rolled in like they were invading, you know, Fallujah. But the thing is, I think that phone call that was made by that lady is, you know, it was the lady. She also worked for the factory, right?
Oh, she was, she was somehow a consultant or something for the factory.
First of all.
But ICE was not the agency you call.
Again, first of all, they should have pointed, they should have told her that, you know what, this is the right authority for you to call.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's anonymous if you reveal yourself. And then you don't become anonymous.
That's a terrible understanding of the English language. Because now she had to come on social media to defend herself. I've had the authorities here looking for me because someone used my name to swindle money from people. I mean, I can't believe people think I will send you 3K. You people underestimating just how dedicated I am to the Stingy Men's Association. But look. Yeah, so now they didn't roll in heavily armored. Due diligence will save you diplomatic scandal. That would have saved them a lot of diplomatic tensions that ensued after that phone call that was made by seemingly an you know someone that did not understand fully what was going on, that you know what was going on between the relationship that brought about that that operation. Yeah, and then called the from the look of things the division of the authorities that also were terrible at due diligence. They did not understand, or they did not even consider looking at, this is what we heard from an anonymous person. It could be just someone who is just high on crack. It could be someone who is just, has issues with the, issues with the company, or issues with the manager, or something like that. You just don't roll in heavily armed to the teeth. But that's exactly what they did, without any due diligence whatsoever.
Or even meeting with the the project manager.
Just call, make an appointment. What happened to that?
And then ask, what's the status of all these immigrant workers from South Korea? What are their roles? What is the overall mission of this project? What do you aim to do? Basic questions like that, straightforward stuff. No rocket science needed.
You know who? You know which group is very good at that?
Who, Helmut?
Our Natural Resources Standing Committee on our National Assembly Standing Committee on Natural Resources, because of the illegal,
the new one.
The previous one.
Oh,
yeah, the illegal lithium mining.
Mm.
Yeah, well, instead of sending the military there, they just decided, we're gonna go there and sit with the people on the ground, find out just how illegal is this illegal lithium mining.
Mm.
What they find?
A whole bunch of miscommunication.
Exactly.
Miscommunication.
Questions are very important.
Yeah. They went and saw on the ground a whole bunch of miscommunication, misinformation, and lack of communication.
Yeah.
Now, the second pillar in this report,
Global Cooperation Barometer report, that's innovation and technology.
No, not that one. The pillar based on climate change.
No, climate change and natural capital.
Yeah. In that particular pillar itself, I still want to see how the because yes, they do explain it a little bit later in the report, obviously, about how globally there's more cooperation taking place on climate change issues. We can look at Namibia and the EU primarily, because Namibia is obviously now part of the Pact for the Future, which has an overwhelming climate-induced language positioned within it. And obviously Namibia is becoming a champion for just energy transition scenario, which also includes South Africa. South Africa got that massive amount of money last year to help them with their just energy transition.
Yeah.
South Africans are asking in the South African economy what's going to happen to all the coal miners in South Africa, because it literally means the coal mines have to stop producing armor. It literally speaks to the coal mines have to stop in South Africa. The coal mines supply, guess who? Eskom! And there are problems. The local policymakers can see issues on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, they don't have questions that are answered. However, Namibia is more nimble as a country. Namibia doesn't have a coal mining industry of note. Namibia has the opportunity of probably escaping such severe economic headwinds, specifically stemming from the mining sector in that regard, because South Africa's mining sector, if you look at it, has an element of local beneficiation through employment creation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come to a Namibian context of looking at the mining sector playing a major role through local beneficiation, or playing a part in local beneficiation in Namibia through through employment, it's not the same as to South Africa's particular discussion. Being it that obviously, you know, not everyone can, you know, they can't employ as many people.
Yeah. They can only employ so much.
Yeah. So, which makes things a little bit tricky. So now, it is a known fact that countries are collaborating a lot more or cooperating a lot more on natural capital and climate change initiatives. So the pillar's name is Climate and Natural Capital Cooperation pillar. However, the barometer report notes here that it is still short of the global goals. Increased financing and supply chains stimulated deployment of clean technologies, which have reached record levels in mid-2025. This is obviously as China accounted for 2/3 of additional solar, wind, and electric vehicles. Other developing economies had stepped up, and this is as multilateral negotiations become more challenging. Groups of nations, for example, the EU and the ASEAN, which is the Association of Southeast Asian Countries, our Southeast Asian nations, are combining decarbonization with energy security goals. And we are not seeing something similar on an African scale. We are fragmented once again on an African scale. I went to, remember the EITI discussion that I told you about?
Yeah, open contracting.
Yeah, I went to that initiative last week and I heard there from, this is now from civil society, Namibian civil society, that there seems to be some element of delusion between our government and the Deloitte report on when the first barrel of oil will be pumped.
The baseline's
the survey that our own government commissioned.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what's bringing about the
delusion?
Yeah.
Well, first and foremost, it is being promoted that oil will be produced by 2030.
Yeah. No.
And we have categorically, in the report it says it, and we have then also seen, okay, we now understand the reasoning behind this, that literally it means that only by 2034 will we see the first barrel being pumped.
Yeah, that's why, please, for the love of God, get the report, because there are no specific time frames in that report. There are time frame ranges, 2 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And 5 to 10 years.
And we are in the 2 to 5 of the exploration and testing phase.
Yeah.
And in the next 5 years, it'll be the getting the infrastructure in place to start, producing.
Yeah.
And that is the six to eight year time frame?
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that's the one from six upwards. That means you are putting it at 2035 and just somewhere there.
Yeah, in 2034 is even a conservative estimate from our side, primarily because it is based on talking to the industry.
Yeah,
not just saying through political rhetoric that things will happen by 2030. Who told? That's it. The government's logo is on that report. They commissioned the report. It's expert analysis in the report. You can't throw it into the window, into the shredder, and now decide, okay, we have national development plan. We must make things happen by 2030.
Look, I know it's very easy to... look, this is not, I will love you until the sea will get dry. This is...
I will love you until hell freezes over.
Lie. Bro just want to get laid. Look, the point here is you...
Helmut.
So, page what? Page 8 of the report.
Yeah. Page 8 of the report.
Yeah, page 8 of the report. This is what it says. Now, this is, to conduct a detailed supply chain assessment, the varying supply chain needs across a 30-plus year life cycle of upstream project. Now, oil and gas specific and non-specific were considered in this analysis. Now, the time frame stands as follows. Exploration and appraisal, 2 to 5 years.
Yeah.
When did the exploration start?
2022, 2023, 2024, 2025, 2026. Yeah.
So this makes it like the final ish year for exploration. That's phase one. And then then phase two is construction of the needed, infrastructure that will enable you to move on to the next phase, which is production. Now, the second phase takes you 6 to 8 years.
And that's construction.
Yeah, that's construction. I would just to be safe, start from 2027.
Yeah.
Now, for phase two.
Now, between construction and the testing and exploration phase, there's a decision that has to happen there.
Yeah.
Which is supposedly the, what do they call it? The final investment decision.
You are looking at the final investment decisions all take place in here. Yeah. Because before you go to production.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
So that's after construction.
Yeah. They say production is after construction.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, to be weird to start with production and then start building tanks. We are going to store everything.
Well, I've heard of such a scenario happening in Namibia in 2017.
So now in the exploration and appraisal phase, they say two to five years period. Now, this is, that's where you see your seismic acquisition and interpretation. That's where they are telling you that, there is not any economic viable resources here, which is what happened to, was that Shell or Puma last year?
It was
Shell. Were they to write off how many billions?
Wasn't it 400?
Yeah.
Was it 400 million? No, it was 400 million US.
400 million.
US.
Holy cow. Now, that falls under the 2 to 5 years exploration and appraisal where you're doing the seismic acquisition and interpretation. A lot of expertise are needed here. Mm. The 6 to 8 years is where you have all your construction and installation of floating production storage if you are talking about offshore oil, offshore oil, which is the one that we have here. I mean, it's about 200, it's almost 300 kilometers offshore. Now, that's when you have your hull and construction and installation and drilling and completion. All those things take 6 to 8 years. So for the next phase, which is construction, start from 2027, 2028, and count 6 to 8 years. Where does that put you?
Past 2030. Yeah. So it makes things tricky, Helmut, because we're obviously now seeing discussions try to happen that sound inclusive of neighborhoods like Africa, but they're not inclusive. Because the neighborhoods of Africa are not invited. Now, which is a reality. I mean, it's a stark reality. So now we have to ask the particular questions of, okay, so now what do these conversations translate to? If we are talking about global cooperation, but firstly, we've got our own internal fragmentation happening.
Yeah.
Three countries now, besides Eritrea, are now, they're not participating in EU functions, not EU, in AU functions. And AU obviously seems to now look like this toothless lion. It's not suffering old age or any other particular vitamin C or calcium deficiency to maintain or contain its teeth in its mouth.
Right.
That it just does not have teeth.
Yeah.
Straightforward. It was born without teeth. It grew up without teeth.
Some kind of deformity.
It can only eat mashed potatoes and fish.
Yep.
Obviously, because it's just got gums left, no teeth.
A soft porridge.
But before we continue, guys, we'll quickly take a short break.
Yeah.
The Vichy University, where the 2026 applications are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following courses. Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, postgraduate diploma in community health nursing, postgraduate diploma in mental health, postgraduate diploma in occupational health and safety, master of science in occupational health and safety, and finally, master of public health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Velvici University, where everyone is an achiever.
So don't lose sleep over oil. Relax. 2034, 2035, put production beginning there. Not full, beginning. Put it there. Now, coming back to the, you know, coming back to this cooperation. So in the next 4 minutes that are left, it's, you know, I think it's just good to wrap it up, you know, to wrap everything up with what you, you know, the point you made earlier that, most of these reports are compiled, you know, with a point of views that somewhat makes it look like a, you know, it's like a one size fits all scenario where you have, all countries can basically pull this off. But, that's why I like the 2015 Paris agreements, because when those agreements were made, like, they made three goals. The last one was, you know, is the one that resonated a lot, because it, you know, it spoke about finance, that not all countries can actually afford finance, you know, to finance their energy transition. So that's where developed countries must now come in to help these developing countries, because for two reasons. One, the developed countries have the resources to help the developing countries. Reason number two is that, these developed countries are developed.
Mm.
They are, you know, they have reached this level of development because of banning of a lot of, you know, a lot of their industries contributed to the consequences, economic and to the climatic consequences that we are suffering from right now. So, you know, it's not some kind of retribution. No.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just us acknowledging that we screwed up,
mm.
and the problems we face is, you know, is boundless. It's going to impact countries that are developing and those that are developed equally.
Yeah.
Whether they like it or not, again, you don't have to like it. You don't have to believe it. All you just have to do is be caught in a crossfire and you're cooked. So, on the cooperation part, Africa alone, I mean, we can have a whole show on Africa's, you know, on Africa's division.
Mm.
Why are we talking about joint reparations now? Because we never really said, okay, we never really came to a unanimous consensus about how to approach that subject with our former colonizers.
And, okay, do you know what's the worst part, Hamon? Okay, it's not the worst part, but it's actually a surprising part. It seems like the rest of Africa on that notion of,
joint reparations.
The joint reparation. They are taking their cue from us.
Namibia.
The conversation we had was last year regarding that announcement where the vice president was part of that open societies discussion that was held here in Windhoek.
Yeah.
Was that, because she also mentioned it seems like the rest of Africa is learning from Namibia's particular courage to stand, literally approach Germany based upon this, even though internally in Namibia, they are Namibians. It also includes me. We are not, which is, okay, I don't want to say we because I'm not affiliated to the other entities,
mm-hmm.
but I personally, I am part of the particular club that is not satisfied with the level of negotiation that was observed back in 2020 during COVID mm-hmm. and 2021. And it is made, and we are, you know, made to believe that this is final and klaar, that this is a conversation that will not be explored again, just for the same MPs from the same government literally saying later on in 2023 or 2024, one of the two, you know what, it seems like this was a mistake treating it as,
it's trivial of some sort.
Yeah, like, let's do this quickly. Let's
just get it out of the way sort of like,
to start with the overall, development agenda with Germany. It should have had its particular respect that it should have been accorded.
Do you think we have a problem balancing between asking for that or more like, not asking, demanding that and also, looking on the side of the fact that both Germany and the EU are our development partners?
Look, Helmut, let me say it this way. Namibia has gained more from South Africa than from Germany.
Yeah.
I'll say it again. And any German company directly from Germany, they can come and argue five ways. Namibia benefits more from South Africa than Namibia benefits from Germany.
Okay, so then what's the cause behind what seems to be beating around the bush?
You have to obviously look at the development projects that have kicked off since 2021, which has been green hydrogen and all the other affiliated projects, obviously, which are driven and championed by the EU. Germany first and EU second. Being that, specifically that, I would put more emphasis on the relationship between Namibia and South Africa and Namibia and China. And then you look at sort of like the daycare mentality we are being given by Germany and the EU, because it is like a daycare mentality. We're being treated like a newborn baby who is still drinking, what's that thing made by Nestle? What's that?
The baby milk formula.
Yeah, we are being treated like a baby. They're still drinking baby milk formula. Anakam, we already know how to drive. We already know how to mine things. We already know how to grow things. What we need is sort of like, okay, now let's help. Let's be assisted in advancing this discussion.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. Much of our trade relationship sits between Namibia and South Africa. The EU does feature as Namibia's biggest trade partner.
Yeah.
The EU. But you and I know the EU is not a country.
Yeah, it's an economic bloc.
It's a bloc. So if you break up the neighborhood, South Africa still looks like our biggest trade partner. If you break up the bloc, South Africa is still by far our biggest trade partner. And if you look at the involvement specifically that China is now ramping up with Namibia.
Yeah.
You would also afford more attention to that kind of relationship approach versus being treated like now a newborn baby still on baby milk formula in a daycare center. I mean, what kind of approach is that?
The kind that shows that you don't want to talk about the subject that the baby wants to talk to. I mean, the adult you are treating as a baby now wants to talk to you about.
And this adult is no longer a teenager. They were a teenager in the 1990s.
Yeah.
Still finding out growing,
fully grown men
still
in their
finding 30s. Out how the hormones will settle, what direction, you know, the orientation of perspectives will be.
Are you sending money home or they are sending money, bail money here? You know? All right.
You have to go to bail money. But yeah.
There are only two ways, buddy. You raise
why money is being sent.
You raise them so that they can send you money.
Yeah.
If you raise them right, they will be sending you money. If you raise them wrong, you'll be sending them bail money.
True.
That's only true. So 3 minutes into the hour of six. So that brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. From me, see you tomorrow. Take care.
On my side, dear listeners, let's see each other again. Same time, same place.